When I work with new coaches, the two words they use to describe themselves most often are excited and nervous. Even to an experienced coach, the new year can bring butterflies and back-to-school nightmares. Figuring out what to do to set yourself up for a successful year can feel like putting together a puzzle when you don't know what the picture looks like. Instead, let's start the year with a roadmap that tells you exactly what to do each day for the so very important first 20 days of school. The things you do the first month of school will make or break your coaching year. Let's do the right things together. Head to buzzingwithmissb.com/startup to join Instructional Coaching Startup. This course teaches you what to do each day for the first 20 days of school with a short video and all of the resources you'll need to set coaching goals, define your role, communicate with administrators, build relationships with teachers, understand your school's needs, and so much more. Join Instructional Coaching Startup today and get your game plan for instructional coaching. I even have a private Facebook group for startup coaches where we work through the course one day at a time together. You can share artifacts, you can ask questions, and get so much information about your coaching role by supporting each other inside of that Facebook group. So head to buzzingwithmissb.com/startup and join Instructional Coaching Startup today. What's your instructional coaching personality type? Have you ever wondered what superpowers make you a really strong coach and what areas you could strengthen a little with a little direction? Well, now you can find out. I created the What's Your Instructional Coaching Personality Type quiz to help you answer this very question. Just head to buzzingwithmissb.com/quiz with a capital Q to take the 2-minute quiz and get your coaching personality type sent right to your inbox. Even better, you'll get a playlist of podcast episodes that are handpicked just for you to help you hone your superpowers and strengthen your areas of growth. I'm so excited to share this quiz with you, so don't wait. Go to buzzingwithmissb.com/quiz and learn so much about your coaching self. Welcome to Instructional Coaching with Miss B, where we believe that every teacher deserves a coach and every coach does too. I'm Chrissy Beltran, an elementary teacher who became a coach, and I had to create my own coaching program that worked. Now I teach coaches how to design their coaching programs, build a school-wide action plan, and use differentiated strategies to support teachers. Plus, I've got a special spot in my heart for literacy coaches. Now let's dig into the episode. Hey, Coach, and welcome to episode 207, How to Use PLCs to Support Culture and Change. This is part of our theme of relationships, resistance, and rookies. And the reason I think PLCs are such an important part of this component is going to become very clear in just a few minutes. When our PLCs aren't working together, it is such a struggle. And I have personally dreaded working with the teams who are the most dysfunctional and who seem to enjoy their work together the least. But PLCs can be a really powerful tool for change and for supporting the culture of learning and growing, especially in our new teachers. So today we're going to talk to Jason Andrews of Solution Tree all about how we can use PLCs to support culture and change. So let's welcome Dr. Jason Andrews to the podcast. Welcome today, Jason.
Great. Good morning. It's great to be here.
Thank you so much for being here. I'm really excited to talk to you about PLCs and how we can use them as a vehicle to support culture and growth. But before we get to that, I want to know a couple of things about you. I want to know, who do you help and how do you spend most of your time and energy at work?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And I think it's evolved over time in terms of that. Who do I help? I think it sort of depends on the day. I spend a lot of my time, of course, working with administrators. But what I find a lot of my time, and now I've become sort of the old guy, this is my 19th year as a superintendent.
Wow.
And I've been in the district now for 27 years. I get a lot of calls from people outside of the district and sort of the, you know, can I pick your brain? And I will try to tell them, well, it's slim pickings, but I'm happy to share, you know, my perspective. You know, a lot of times in terms of leaders, I spend a lot of time, I'm not even sure necessarily helping, but just listening and having them talk through their situations, their issues. What I think I've learned over time is what I thought help used to be and what I think it is now. You know, I thought that my job in terms of help was, you ask, I answer. And I think what I've learned over time is that you ask, I ask, and help you to get to that answer. I think, you know, helping people, where a lot of my energy is helping them either affirm that their thinking is right on or to consider a different perspective, has been something. I will tell you, you know, I've gotten some scars and bruises along the way from that, because people often will say, well, I'm calling you for the answer. Mm-hmm. If I knew the answer, then so there can be some, a bit of a growth piece with that. So that's a lot of the energy. I think for me, I spend a lot more of my energy on things I never would have thought I'd spend my energy on. And that is really that. I spend a ton of time on mission, vision, values, goals, like things, constantly talking about what are we trying to do here. Right now, our state budget proposal from the governor is not positive. And so we're trying to figure out, all right, so one, how do we make sure we maintain and continue to, we're not a district that wants to be status quo. How do we continue to move forward and thrive? But also, where is the opportunity in this? And, you know, we can spend all of our time talking about, oh, this is terrible and this is awful. Mm-hmm. And I had a tough reminder last week working with our leadership team, but it's been a similar thing that I've had as I've worked with leaders in other districts and saying, well, we've been through this before. We've, you know, and what they reminded me is, we haven't. I have. And so how do you sort of bring people in that, this does not have to be negative. This does not have to be awful and traumatic. And it is a way for us to force us to say, is there a way to do this differently?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, trying to make sure, like, you know, one of the phrases that I learned was told a long, long time ago is that for there to be a cut, there has to be blood. You have to see blood. Otherwise, it's a scratch. And so, yes, we can do a whole bunch of scratches, but maybe the opportunity is actually to cut. So what does that look like? So that's right now what I'm spending a lot of my time doing. I'm also, it is budget season, but I'm the president of our state superintendents association. So right now, a lot of energy around kind of that advocacy work and the statewide piece of it. So
that's great.
Lots of kind of different and dynamic things that just sort of depends on the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a really good point, though. While I do think that we need to advocate for schools, and you are doing that clearly around your superintendency work, but everybody needs to advocate for schools. I think you're right that in the moment, you're like, okay, well, we have to look at this as an opportunity to figure something out, because there's really not other options there, right? You got to make it work.
Yeah, and I think especially, again, having been in the spot so long,
mm-hmm.
It's really interesting when you, from a leadership standpoint, but really in the classroom too, when you're newer and it's almost invigorating and rewarding to clean up someone else's problem.
Mm-hmm.
That you're, you know, I'm taking care of the mess that was left for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's much less fun to clean up your own mess. You know, it's sort of like cooking at home, right? And so, when you're thinking about, all right, well, the things that we may have to consider are things that, you know, during my time we built together, mm-hmm. and that's hard, and trying to do it in such a way that we say, well, you know, we may have to look at this differently, and it doesn't necessarily feel good when it's something you created.
Yeah,
you know, it's sort of like at home right now, we're doing some renovations, and the contractor is saying, well, I don't know who the idiot that did this was. And I'm thinking, well, I know who the idiot was.
Yeah, you're looking, right.
At the idiot, you know,
exactly.
So it's, yeah. Which is different from, you know, the old owner. And,
right.
And so I think that's, it just is an interesting piece. And I also just think, you can be upset, you can be, you know, feel like it's, we're victims or whatever. I mean, and that doesn't really accomplish a whole lot. So, right. I, you know, the whole choose your attitude thing, I just think is so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We were big fish philosophy people whenever I was a new teacher. I remember
for
that.
For sure.
Really. Yeah.
For sure.
So now my second question to get to know you a little bit more is, what is a movie that you could watch every single day?
Yeah. You know, that's actually a tough question. So I'm not a big movie person.
Okay.
And in fact, just last week I said to my wife, do you want to go to the movies? And she was like, is everything okay? She loves the movies. I don't, but I, just recently flipping through saw Shawshank Redemption on, I've probably seen it 150 times and I could see it 150 times more. That and Forrest Gump. And I think with either of them, no matter, you don't have to start them at the beginning.
Yeah.
In the last month, I've seen portions of both of them, you know, multiple times and really can't get enough of either of them.
Yeah, those are good ones. I can't watch them too often. They're a little emotional for me and I tend to dwell. So
right.
I avoid it when I can. But yeah, those are fantastic. So I want to talk with you a little bit actually about some of the things you already kind of mentioned, that so many schools are experiencing a lot of struggle and a lot of change right now. They're seeing a lot of things shift. We've got a lot of brand new people to the field, some people who are uncertified and really have not had classroom experience in any way. We have a lot of veteran teachers leaving. We have a lot of new curriculum, people who are implementing new things. It's struggle bus, right, for a lot of schools. So when that happens, how does that affect our PLC, our school PLC?
Yeah, you know, I think this is a critical area that we need to focus on. And I think it goes back to some of the things that I said. You know, we kicked this work off in with Rick and Becky DeFore in 2006 in our school. And when I look at the number of people who are here now and who were here then, it's just a completely different group. And I think, again, going to the opportunity is really trying to take a very different look at how we approach new teacher induction and support. And I'll tell you, so again, I've been in the district a long time. I was hired. I'm this brand new. I was a certified teacher and went through the teacher prep program. I was a history teacher, but I don't have a degree in history. And I was a political science major. And that first year, even though I had student taught, I had done all those things, and I was a coach in the district as well. So I had sort of I built some of those relationships even before school started. But I will tell you, it was a tough road. And I had to learn the content. I had to learn the instructional strategies and the pedagogy. I had to, you know, I was only a few years older than the kids I was trying to teach and try to learn that whole boundary and some of that. And I worked with great people, but I felt like more like I was pledging a fraternity than I was joining a profession. And I think that whole, no one did it for me, you've got to do it yourself, you've got to figure it out, is a real problem. And I think at the end of the day, you know, not only was it hard on me, you know, and I'll see now, and again, they're not that much younger than me, some of my first year students. And I think they should probably like take me to court for educational malpractice. Like, it was bad. And the support that I got was more like when the principal comes in to observe, and he'll come in once, this is what he wants to see. It wasn't, you know, really that support. So I think then when we look at people who are going through alternate certification programs, we need to do even more to support them. And I think that's really one of the great gifts of the PLC process is that you have a team. And if we truly mean a team, I was in a department. We were nothing like a team. And when we get to the, you know, the interdependence and the mutual accountability pieces of that, then it's no longer, look, figure it out, kid, you're on your own. Mm-hmm. And if you fall down, good for you. I had to do that too, right? So to really being, I need to do the very highest level of support for someone on my team because I depend on them. I can't have individual success without them. And so I think there's a great opportunity. I think one of the tricky parts is the terminology. So people are like, oh yeah, I know PLCs. Well, do you really? Mm-hmm. And so how do you onboard people in such a way that you get to some of the depth about the PLC process and, mm-hmm. and remembering that it's a process, not a program. And so how do you really try to bring people up to speed and at the same time, not stop everything you're doing and start over? Likewise, so if you have a new team member, you have a new team. So now we have to do some norming and we have to talk about norm accountability protocols and we need to do some of that work. But we also aren't saying, well, new team member, so we start over. So I think there's a there's some natural conflict with some of that. But what I'll tell you, you know, COVID was an interesting, again, opportunity with some of that. And during that time that we were closed, I checked in with every member of our instructional staff individually at some point, and almost to a person, they said something to the effect of, I don't know what I would have done without my team. Mm-hmm. And I think about that, you know, what are some of the stress points in life? And, you know, there are births and there are deaths and there are weddings and there are divorces and there are moves and there are fires and there are all these things. What I think I have, not I think, I know in our district what I have seen and in all the other districts, you know, I've worked in many, many districts around the country now. The team is really that cog that holds it together. You know, we mm-hmm. recently had a teacher and her mother and had passed away very suddenly. And her team said, don't worry, we've got it. Mm-hmm. And they did. And I think those new staff members, as they're trying to go through all of the tricky parts that I tried to figure out, if they have a team that says, don't worry, we've got you. I have a one-year-old granddaughter. She just turned one last week, and she's about the greatest gift that we've ever had. And we know she's actually exceptional. She's gifted. We know that already. But
you can tell right away.
Of course, yeah, we can see it. But it's interesting to watch her. And I you know, with our own kids, I just didn't pay so much attention to some of those things. But watching her as she's now learning to walk, mm-hmm. and it's okay if she falls down because somebody's right there. Mm-hmm. We're making sure that you know, she's going to fall down. That's part of learning to walk, but she's not alone. We're right there. And I think that, you know, as new teachers are joining the profession and recognizing they're going to fall down mm-hmm. and it's going to sometimes hurt, but they've got people there to pick them up because they care about them. And ultimately we need her to walk because she can't be carried around for her whole life. Right. So right. We need our new teachers to be able to do the same thing. So I think that times are tough and I think they've always been tough to a degree. I think there's some validity to it's harder than it's ever been. I do think that kids are coming with greater needs and, you know, there's, I think some of the, just societal discontent mm-hmm. that spills over into schools. But I think if we try to hold each other up and we truly know what a team is and truly collaborate, not pretend, then I think we're going to be okay.
So you're talking, I like what you're talking about, like using these teams to support our new teachers, to create a safety net, to help onboard for sure. So using PLCs to do all these things, what is the culture that we're trying to build? And how can school leadership use the PLC, to build this culture?
Yeah, and I would say yes, it's about support, but it's also about that accountability. You know, so I started out teaching U.S. history, and what I was given was the textbook. So part of it is all, and so I chose, these are what I think are important. So part of the PLC process for the team to say, yes, so these are the things that we've agreed are the essential standards that we're going to guarantee here. So I think it's not just the support, but it's also that accountability. We're going to have that mutual accountability, and yes, I'm going to pick you up when you fall down, but I'm also going to say we agreed we're going to be at this point this time. So I think there's that it's both. And if you think about it, whenever I have, and I don't know when, it's been a long time, whenever I have been good about exercising is when I've had someone to hold me accountable, that accountability partner. So I think it's both. I think it's support, but support, sometimes I'll say to my wife as I'm trying to lose weight, support doesn't always feel good. When she'll ask me, are you sure you want to eat that? Right. So I don't always support. I don't always like to be supported. And I think that's part of that piece too, is it's not there there. So I think part of that culture then is that that mutual accountability. We're accountable to each other to ensure kids learn. And I think that when we think about the PLC process, that one of the big things that I learned the hard way. So we got really excited and we said, yes, this makes sense. So we need to do this, then we need to do this, and we need to do this. And I love the analogy that Dr. Anthony Muhammad uses about culture versus those technical changes. Because I think what we often do is jump in a whole lot and we say, all right, we need to get our common formative assessments and what's our data protocol going to look like? And all right, let's change the schedule. And now we need to talk about grading. I was with a school yesterday. What are we doing with our grading? All absolutely true. But what he uses as the analogy is he describes all of those things as seeds. And if we plant those seeds in infertile soil, then nothing will grow. And then what he describes the school culture as is the soil. And so I think there's this interesting balance. And that is, you can't have infertile soil, but you also can't just be fertilizing the soil either. At some point, you have to plant a seed. And I think we sometimes, not only do we have infertile soil, but we will overseed, we will overplant. And so trying to say, okay, here's our soil. And our soil is really digging into, what are our core beliefs? What do we believe about kids? And what that really means, because I can't see anyone's beliefs, is that what it really means is our culture is our behaviors. How will we behave? And one of Dr. Muhammad's really powerful quotes to me is that the culture of your school is only as good as the worst adult behavior you're willing to tolerate. And that to me was a bit of a gut punch because I think sometimes, we'll talk about soil, our culture is so great. We love kids so much. I also think that we will often misunderstand culture, the soil, for climate. And so culture is how we behave, climate is how we feel. They're related, but they're not the same thing. And so I think sometimes just because we feel good about something or bad about something, then that doesn't mean we have a good or bad culture.
Right.
And so, you know, I think, again, that lesson that I learned, I spend a lot more time on soil than seeds. And being really clear, especially with new staff, you think about a traditional, you know, new staff orientation, new teacher induction. It's let me show you this seed, this seed, this seed, yep. this seed, this plant, this plant, this plant. But we don't talk a lot about what our soil is. What do we believe about kids? You know, we just recently had an interesting situation where there was a conversation about someone made a statement, not within the district, about a teacher should never be alone with a student. I said, well, let's talk about that because I don't think that's our belief, you know, that we have people that are doing one-on-one work with kids all the time. Right. Mm-hmm. So now let's talk about line of sight and, you know, being careful about, you know, not putting yourself in a bad situation and so on.
Right.
But to say, you know, well, our belief here is that there are going to be times that we're going to need to work individually with students to ensure that they're, you know, in our case, our mission or that shared mission is to ensure each learner's future ready. So if we're going to have every kid future ready, then we have to do that. So I think being clear about, well, what do we believe about kids? What are those behaviors going to be? And so, I think that's a really important piece. And I think for people to be successful, they need to know the soil of the organization they're joining. And if you're in a school that can't describe your soil, you know, so you have to do some soil testing too, right? So, I mean, our kids in our ag program and our environmental science are out doing soil testing to see what needs to be done. And sometimes you don't like what you see with that. And so we have to spend some more time really determining what is our culture. And so I think that's a really important part.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you're talking about this because just the other day I was talking to a teacher who has a new administrator this year. You know, it's been almost a whole school year. Right. And I said, well, some of the concerns, you know, I'm hearing these different concerns. And I said, well, what are some of the things that are important to this administrator? What are their values? What are their priorities? And she paused and she said, you know what? I don't know. I couldn't tell you. Mm-hmm. And that was like, you know, it's been almost a year and the teacher still doesn't know what the administrator values. She goes, well, it's not this, it's not this, it's not this, because these are all concerns we've brought to them and they have not addressed them. So I don't know what it is. I'm not seeing any, there's no new, she goes, usually I'm used to like, well, this is our big thing and we're all going to get behind it. We're going to work together and we're going to help each other and we're going to do it. I haven't seen any of that this year because it feels very like, we're just kind of like floating along, you know? So that, and that was huge indicator to me of lacking school culture.
For sure. Which I think, again, I go back to my own experience. Mm-hmm. Teachers could tell me what they wanted to see in my class in an observation, but not what their core values were.
Exactly. Follow the curriculum. This is the curriculum, but not this is why we think this is important, or these are the pieces that are essential, or any of that. Yeah.
You know, the four pillars of a PLC, mission, vision, values, which then influence our collective commitments and goals, that is, you know, that's the foundation of this work. And our teams rest on those four pillars and trying to make the distinction. I spend so much time talking about mission and I never would have thought, I would have said, oh, you know what, I'm going to punch you in the face if you talk about that much. But it's not about let's wordsmith a mission statement. Mm-hmm. Is if we're really going to be collaborative, if our culture, our soil is going to be collaborative, well, first of all, the root word of collaboration isn't talk and isn't meet and isn't even share, labor, it's work. Well, if we're not working toward the same thing, how can we collaborate? Mm-hmm. It's not possible. So that mission, what that shared mission of what is it we're trying to do here? You know, why do we exist is really important. And then, you know, and as you share that new teacher piece, so the part of the leadership, but then for teachers as well, is then that vision piece, you know, is that aspirational what question. What do we want to become? Mm-hmm. What do we want to be known for? What do we want to build? And, you know, I always use the analogy and to say to people, look, you want to go on a trip with me? Your first question is, where are we going?
Mm-hmm.
And I think in a lot of schools, we have not spent time on where are we going?
Mm-hmm.
We say, we're driving. We're going for a drive. Yeah, I'm not interested. I think there are a lot of schools that are driving, mm-hmm. but they haven't put a destination in their GPS to say, this is where we're going. And so, you know, as you think about that, so I'm clear on the purpose, I'm clear on the destination, that vision. Well, then, you know, because I travel a lot and I use GPS, I have to then follow the directions. I have to have mm-hmm. a destination. By the way, I also have to have where I am. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think we are current reality adverse. We don't want to talk about where we are because it mm-hmm. doesn't always feel good, climate. But here's where we are. Here's where we're going. Then I can't just say, well, I drive. I have to follow the turn-by-turn directions. That's that values, that behaviors piece. And then, you know, if you use your GPS, it tells you your estimated time of arrival. And if you stop, well, it's gonna change it. If you get off at the wrong exit,
mm-hmm.
well, what does it do? It recalculates, mm-hmm. but it didn't change the destination. It recalculates. It may take us a little longer to get there. Or, you know, if I drive a little too fast or I, you know, take chances, run some red lights, I might get there a little sooner. Mm-hmm. And I think that foundational piece of those pillars is so important. And if you don't articulate that as a leader, and, you know, so the key to leadership is followership. And so for that teacher to say, I don't know, then I'm not really following anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. They're just checking some boxes of things that they've been asked to do. So then in thinking about change and how, like you were talking about navigating towards a destination, how can school leadership use like PLCs in terms of, you know, grade level teams and things like that as a vehicle for change? And then what are some things that maybe leaders are using PLCs that are harmful to change? So like a quick example, when we were new to the PLC process, like you mentioned back in 06, we were getting trained in this as well as teachers. I was a teacher at the time. And I can remember spending all of our faculty meetings and all of our grade level meetings talking about PLCs and learning about PLCs, but then we didn't do the work of PLCs. Mm-hmm. My grade level was, you know, we worked together really well aside from that, but the school didn't really support us in working together. It was more like, let's learn about how to work together. And then we didn't. If you did, you did. And if you didn't, you didn't. And there was no real change there, you know? So what are your thoughts on that? How can we support grade level teams or vertical alignment teams or, you know, content area teams and use PLCs to support change in those areas? And what are maybe some mistakes we make?
Yeah, sure. So I think, so change for change sake, I think is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we want to be clear of, go back to, I was a high school teacher and a middle school principal, and by my nature, I am skeptical. Some people, you know, might call it other things, but I'm a skeptic. And I think that too often we don't have a clear answer of why. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to, before you ask me to change, you have to have a compelling reason of why, you know, and mm-hmm. that, you know, if you look at Cotter's change model, for example, you know, we have to create a sense of urgency. There has to be a reason why we're doing that, because I think that too often, and that's one of the things why I think the PLC process is so important, mm-hmm. that we get so in education into what's the shiny rock, what's the new thing that we can chase. And I think, you know, that where you get people where that here we go again, mm-hmm. the pendulum will swing, I'll wait it out, et cetera. And that's the case often with programs. Again, this is not a program, it's a process. So I think where it can help for change is, go back to our pillars. So mission, vision, values, and goals. So mm-hmm. when we started out, you know, our graduation rate was 78%. That's not okay. We have to change what we're doing in order to achieve what we all would say is our, you know, not only our mission of all, but also our goal. So I think that, you know, having that compelling mission, vision, values, and goals can help with that change and recognize, all right, well, our mission isn't most. Unless that's what, let's talk about that. Is most what we want to do? You know, let's talk through that. If we're okay with exclusions, then fine. So I think part of that, where the PLC process is important is in those pillars. I also think, you know, at the end of the day, where what this is all about is empowerment. This is about empowering individuals and teams of teachers to impact their professional practice. You know, I think our district does a really good job with professional development. And I hope that our teachers learn more in their professional learning teams than they do in our conference days that we do throughout the year. Mm-hmm. That job embedded learning, that's how we're going to change. Because I think, you know, one of the underlying assumptions that I have is this, and again, I've worked in, you know, many, many schools, and I think it's not just the case in mine, but in other schools. Schools are filled with incredibly hardworking, well-intentioned people. And the underlying assumption that I do my work based on is people are doing the best work they can. They're not holding back their good strategies. And despite best efforts to give feedback and to evaluate and to provide professional development, leaders cannot have that daily impact of, so I did it the best way I knew how. It didn't meet the needs of all kids. What can I do differently? There's where I need my team. That the team together, that job embedded learning. And by the way, maybe no one on our team knows this idea of collective inquiry. We need to learn this together. And I see that so often across our district right now as people are grappling a bit with AI. What does that look like? How should it look, et cetera? Well, I don't know. We could bring in some experts. Well, what do we have? We have members of our staff that have said, yeah, so let me show you what I've been doing and how I've been learning with it, et cetera. So I think the PLC process and the collaborative culture, but also to the four critical questions going through that piece, if we're going to ensure all kids learn, you can't do that alone. So how do we intervene? Well, we have a group response. You help me get better. I help you get better. You take my kids. I take your kids. They're our kids. All of those things. I think going to the second part, what are some mistakes? Well, I think compliance. I think, you know, again, the checking off of the boxes. I think the settling for PLC light. I think the collaboration by invitation. Again, the culture of your school is only as good as the worst adult behavior you're willing to tolerate. Well, you know, Chrissy doesn't like to collaborate, so she doesn't have to.
Right.
I thought I was heroic as a teacher that I was here early and I would give up my lunch to work with kids. That's not systematic interventions to say I'm available. You know, my treadmill was available to me this morning too. I didn't use it, but it was there.
Right.
You know, though to really to say we do this, oh, we've been doing PLCs for years, but to pick and choose, we like this part, we don't like that part. You know, the whole fidelity piece, I think, is important, and versus the compliance, I'm going to collect your agendas. I want to see your minutes, but I don't really know what you're doing.
Right. The boxes.
Checking the boxes. And I think that's easy to do. It's also, You might be surprised, you might not be surprised how often I will go places and they'll say, listen, we want you to, you know, we've been doing the PLC work for a long time. We just need a quick little refresher. But it has a really bad name.
Yeah.
So don't use the term at all.
Yes, I've heard
Like,
people say that.
yeah,
Yeah.
be like, what? All right, I'll try. But you know, and so I think trying to get back to what is it that we're talking about, or you know, oh my, like, yeah, the district isn't, but my team, we have been for, well, now let's talk about that. Have you really? You know, I in my trainings often I do a distinction, try to make a distinction between being cooperative and being collaborative. And I think often we settle for being cooperative, being groups. We get along great.
Yeah.
We share some things. Yeah, so that's not the PLC process, you know, that and recognizing that we are not necessarily equipped to collaborate. When we start looking at the distinctions of being collaborative and trust, vulnerability, that takes some time to build and a skill set. I can go into any meeting and be cooperative and be collegial, easy. Being collaborative, so now I'm going to challenge you. I'm going to poke at things. Now that's a different, higher bar. And I think that what I think the big mistake is settling.
Getting stuck there and just saying, well, this is fine. This is the way it is.
Yep.
Yeah. Because that's a
And
normal
people
thing
like
people
it.
move through, right? It's a normal part of the process to move through that. But then there need to be those conversations that push it beyond just, okay, well, sure. Yeah, that sounds good. But I'm going to go back and do whatever I'm going to do.
Absolutely. And in some where the culture isn't so good, it's even, oh yeah, I've been doing it that way also for years. A little bit better though. You know, this culture of competition.
Yes.
And I think that's
Yes.
another mistake that people will make is, you know, so we're going to use formative assessments to, you know, rank and compare teachers. Well, if you're going to compare me and now evaluate me in that way, why would I possibly give my competitor
Right.
my best suggestions, my best tools? Wouldn't do that. But if we're a team with mutual accountability, we have shared results, collective results. Well, now, yeah, I'm going to do whatever I can so that you have success because your success is my success.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, go team. That's what we're trying to build, right? Is a group of people that rely on each other, support each other, and challenge each other. Yeah.
And I think so. I'm a huge Buffalo Bills fan, have
Okay.
been long suffering Buffalo Bills fan for many, many years. And of course, we continue to suffer and get punished. I don't know, you know, what God is punishing us for
You know,
exactly.
my
But
husband is a Cowboys fan, so he can relate.
oh, yeah,
He can
right.
relate.
Well, I have a friend who's a Cowboys fan, and last week when the AT&T outage happened, and I saw this thing that said that I sent to my friend that said, I now know why, you know, in Dallas it's AT&T Stadium. You just can't count on them. You know, it was great. But so Josh Allen has been this super exciting, you know, young quarterback to join the team. And so the whole Bills Mafia group, what they will tend to do is say, but look at Josh Allen's stats. And it's laughable to me because they love to compare Josh Allen to Patrick Mahomes. And they say, well, but look at Josh Allen's stats. They're better than Patrick Mahomes, which is true. The difference is Patrick Mahomes has a Super Bowl ring and Josh Allen doesn't, you know, because the individual results don't matter.
Right. If you're playing
I
fantasy
mean,
football, that's
great.
fine, but right.
But we're a team. And
Right.
so, you know, that's like saying, oh yeah, Josh Allen won the Super Bowl this year. I mean, it's ridiculous, but we do that a lot in schools. And so instead, look, the team score is what matters. Look, great. Chrissy knocked this out of the park. Good for her. But if Jason didn't,
yeah,
that matters as much to Chrissy as not. Now, it may be, and it's, again, going back to my Bills thing, there's been all this, you know, it's like watching a soap opera. Everybody talking about Josh Allen and Stefon Diggs. Do they like each other? Do they not like each other? Whatever. And they get all worked up about it. You know, there has been time where you would see a little bit of conflict, mm-hmm. where you would see, I think, Stefon Diggs saying, hey, I was open, throw me the ball. That's okay. We should mm-hmm. have that because there it's a team. And so if Chrissy, if you're knocking it out of the park and I'm not, then you should be able to come and say, Jason, you got to step it up because our team needs you. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a really important part of that is there's too much work to do in schools to play a game yes. with this, to there pretend. Is. I don't have time to pretend. We've got too many things and too many families. You know, the majority of our kids live in poverty and they don't have the luxury of waiting for us to play a game and pretend that we're doing this work. They need us to get serious about it.
That's right. Excuse me. Yeah, I totally agree. Thank you so much for everything that you shared with us today. And I love the way that you're approaching school culture. I'm sure that some coaches are going to walk away with some really good ideas from this, like kind of thinking about where is my school falling? And so if they want to keep learning from you, how can they do that? Where can they?
Sure. Well, absolutely. So, you know, happy to connect with people and they can find me on the Solution Tree website.
Okay.
To contact me in that way. In addition, my email address is Leadership Advisors. It's advisors with an E, Leadership Advisers at gmail.com.
All right. Thank you so much. That's perfect. I really appreciate you being here today.
Great. Thank you.
All right, Coach. I'm so glad that Dr. Andrews was able to join us here. As you can see, he has a wealth of knowledge about how we can use PLCs to create culture on our campuses. And I hope you look him up and continue learning from him there at Solution Tree. I wanted to remind you about my free email course, Coaching Resistant Teachers. It comes straight into your inbox. So if you have teachers that you're working with and you're not getting good return, you're feeling like they don't love working with you, they're kind of hiding out from you, definitely check that out because it is free and it has helped so many coaches change the trajectory of that coaching relationship. You can grab it at buzzingwithmissb.com/resistance. Next week, we're going to continue our series of resistance rookies and what is my other R word? Relationships, resistance, and rookies with a special episode about coaching new teachers. We've got a lot of new people in the field, a lot of people who don't have a lot of experience in the classroom, and we got to provide special support to those people. So I will see you back here to talk about that next week in episode 208. And until then, happy coaching. Now that you've got so much to think about, head over to buzzingwithmissb.com to grab some free downloads, become a VIB, and check out the podcast show notes. Happy coaching!